The gender pay gap among Montana government employees is smaller than it is in the private sector. That's our top story tonight on Montana Evening Edition. Good evening, I'm Corin Cates-Carney.
And I'm Conrad Scheid. A new voting office is opening soon on the Blackfeet Indian Reservation, and Flathead reporter Katrin Fry tells us how some people are recognizing the 50th anniversary of the Wilderness Act.
A new state audit shows the gender pay gap among Montana government employees is nearly 20% smaller than it is statewide. Women make about 67% of what men earn on average across the state. The Montana Department of Administration audit released today shows women in the government make about 86% of what men earn. The audit says women in the same occupation as men make 98.68% of the men's salary, but women tend to be underrepresented in underrepresented in higher-level management positions. The audit also shows women are more likely than men to be underemployed, meaning they have a high level of education that is higher than their level of work they do. The audit was released by Governor Steve Bullock's Equal Pay for Equal Work Task Force.
In other news from around Montana, Secretary of State Linda McCullough says a satellite voting office will open on the Blackfeet Indian Reservation in Glacier County in time for the November elections. McCullough says she's always been a supporter of satellite voting offices, and this is the first of several counties in Montana that are in the process of opening satellites since the federal voting rights lawsuit settlement in June.
The three counties that were sued will open satellite offices, and then this was outside the lawsuit. This is the fourth county, and we're in discussions with some other county clerks and recorders that are on reservations about opening satellite offices on those areas.
The settlement called for voting offices on the Crow, Northern Cheyenne, and Fort Belknap reservations. American Indian plaintiffs had argued they were discriminated against because they had to drive long distances to county courthouses to register late and vote early in elections. The Secretary of State's office will fund the purchase of a ballot-on-demand machine to be used at the elections office.
It's just new to the state, and I offered grants to all the clerks and recorders on reservations. I've offered to buy two of those machines.
Glacier County Commissioner Michael DeRosio says the county has been working on increasing voting access for 7 years, and the new office will eliminate the need for voters to drive dozens of miles.
I think it's a great thing. I think the people are going to welcome it. It's some of the things we've talked about for a number of years. It's just another step forward to making it easier for them to access all of the county services without having to travel great distances.
Officials will open the office in Browning and staff it twice a week for 30 days prior to elections.
A former University of Montana basketball player has pleaded not guilty to a charge of selling prescription stimulants. The Missoulian Report's 24-year-old Eric Taylor Hutchinson appeared this morning in Missoula County District Court on one criminal count of distribution of dangerous drugs. Prosecutors say Hutchinson sold 1,000 tablets of Adderall for $5 each. He allegedly sold pills twice to undercover law enforcement officers. Adderall is used to treat narcolepsy and attention deficit disorder. Hutchinson played center and averaged 3.8 points and 2 rebounds per game last season.
Two California residents have pleaded guilty to drug charges after being stopped on Interstate 90 in south-central Montana with 115 pounds of marijuana in their rental car. The Stillwater County News reports 37-year-old Rick Franklin Voigt and 41-year-old Don Dolores Voigt both pleaded guilty on July 24th to criminal possession of dangerous drugs with intent to distribute. Under the plea agreement, both face a 5-year commitment to the Department of Corrections with 2 years suspended when they are sentenced on September 5th. They were arrested in April after a Montana Highway Patrol trooper pulled them over for speeding. Court records say they appeared nervous and gave conflicting stories about their travel plans. The trooper asked for assistance from the Stillwater County K-9 unit, and officers impounded the car after their dog Jordy alerted on it.
Law enforcement officers from Montana and 14 other states are stepping up patrols over 5,600 miles of highway for the next several days. I-90, I-94 are two of the nation's most highly traveled and dangerous interstates. The Montana Highway Patrol and hundreds of other highway safety officers from every state along those interstates between Washington State and New York will crack down on dangerous driving offenses. Montana Department of Justice Communications Director John Bards says the I-90-94 challenge is being led by Minnesota State Patrol.
They chose this corridor, obviously, because it's one of the major corridors that runs through their state, and because it can be a particularly dangerous corridor. From August 1st through the 4th, over the last 3 years, you're looking at an average of 524 total crashes. Now, this is for the entire corridor. I don't want you to think this is just for Montana. 524 total crashes, 136 injury crashes, 56 crashes involving a big truck or a bus, 10 alcohol-related crashes, and 3 fatals.
Barnes says the goals of this step-up law enforcement presence includes cutting the crash totals by half, having less than 69 injury crashes, less than 6 alcohol-related wrecks, fewer than 29 bus or truck crashes, and 0 fatalities.
It's a goal, and whether or not it's realistic, I'm going to say that we're going to aim for this goal, and we want to get there, and we're going to do everything we can to get there. You know, our highway patrol, one of their responsibilities, their primary responsibility, is protecting our highways and making sure that drivers there are kept safe. And so we are going to aim for 0 fatals on our portion of the corridor for this period, and we're going to aim for that.
Law enforcement will not hesitate to ticket or arrest people who are speeding, driving under the influence of drugs or alcohol, driving distracted, not wearing seatbelts, or any other unsafe practices. This enhanced traffic enforcement project starts tomorrow and continues through August 4th.
Montana Highway Patrol officials say a 68-year-old man died after his car crashed off U.S. Highway 89 near Neihardt. The Great Falls Tribune reports the Highway Patrol identified the man as a White Sulphur Springs resident, but would not release his name until the family had been notified. Authorities say the man's Chevrolet Camaro was headed south when it left the roadway sometime between midnight and 2:30 this morning. The driver overcorrected twice before the car rolled over, pinning him beneath it.
A jockey who was injured during a weekend horse raid at the Montana State Fair remains hospitalized, but his condition is improving. Bill Christian suffered head injuries on Sunday when his horse fell. The horse suffered a shoulder injury and was euthanized. Christian was initially hospitalized in serious condition. Benefits Healthcare spokeswoman Karen Ogden told Great Falls Tribune that Christian's condition was upgraded to fair yesterday.
A Billings attorney faces a 10-month suspension for withholding information from a judge in an adoption case and hampering investigations into his conduct in 2 other cases. The Billings Gazette reports the Montana Supreme Court filed orders last week that Roy W. Johnson Jr. be suspended practicing law for 3 months for the adoption case and for another 7 months for failing to turn over requested documents in 2 other cases. The suspensions will begin September 1st. Johnson could not be reached for comment. He was publicly censured by the Montana Supreme Court in 2008. In February 2011, he was censured and put on probation for 2 years, and in December of 2011, he was suspended for 60 days.
2014 marks 50 years of wilderness in the U.S., 50 years of land designated as non-motorized, no roads, no bikes, only feet, hooves, and muscle to get you through. Western Montana's Bob Marshall became wilderness with the 1964 Wilderness Act. Flathead reporter Catherine Fry has more on how people are honoring that milestone.
First, a clarification. The 1964 Wilderness Act provides for areas where the earth and its community of life are untrammeled by man. Executive Director of the Bob Marshall Wilderness Foundation, Carol Treadwell, says not untrampled.
Untrammeled means uncontrolled. So in a natural state, letting natural things take place and not being tweaked by human influences. It's there for the wildlife and so that we can have wild experiences.
Education and Outreach Coordinator Jenny Clotier with the foundation just got back from a trip into the Bob.
I had a lot of time to reflect when I was in there that it must have been so similar to when my mom was 8 years old and she was going into the Bob with her family. I think that I thought a lot about wilderness while I was in there, and I was seeing the landscape in much the same way as my family has been seeing it for the last 50 years.
Clotier says one of the important things about wilderness is that there remain places where people are still just visitors.
In this day and age, we are so connected to our devices and to computers and things that are wired or wireless all the time. And to be in a place for days where those sort of interruptions are not part of your life is really grounding.
Photographer Mandy Moeller is prepping for a 9 to 10 day solo trip into the Bob to start the first week of August. Her phone pipes in at several intervals while she talks of trip details and shows what she's bringing.
And I'll have pepper spray, first aid kit, probably my gun.
Moeller says she'll be bringing her phone for music as her creature comfort. But overall, she's looking forward to unplugging.
Schedules just kind of go away. Your schedules are very basic about making sure that you have everything ready before the sun goes down, making sure that you're fed, making sure that you have a shelter, basic, basic stuff. And so it's kind of, you know, it just, everything kind of washes away to the most simplest form.
Moeller participated in the Artist Wilderness Connection in 2012. It's a partnership between the Flathead National Forest, the Hockaday, Bob Marshall Wilderness Foundation, and the Swan Ecosystem Center, where a few artists are selected each year to pack into the wilderness, then share the work they've created once they return to civilization. Moeller went into the neighboring Great Bear Wilderness, but this will be her first trip into the Bob.
I was like, I can't believe I've never been in the Bob before, and I should probably go. And I got kind of the bug when I went into the Artist Wilderness Connection. I really loved my experience back there. We were back there for 7 days, and I felt like I could just stay there.
Moeller says the last trip was 14 miles. She had support from a horse packing team and was at a Forest Service cabin with a bed, gas stove, and other artists for company. This time, she's hiking through, bringing one horse to help carry her camera and backcountry gear, and planning to trek 94 miles over 10 days.
I'm hoping to just document the Bob Marshall and show how beautiful it is and inspire other people to go out and see it for itself, and also at the same time get some footage of me completing the experience as well and just the ins and outs of what it takes to do a trip like this.
The Flathead National Forest's Spotted Bear District up the South Fork of the Flathead River is a jumping-off point into the Bob Marshall Wilderness. District Ranger Deb Mucklow says the Bob Marshall Wilderness Complex includes the Great Bear and Scapegoat Wildernesses. Mucklow says it's among the larger connected wilderness zones in the country.
You're taking a step back in time as far as primitive skills, what we within the Forest Service and users have to do with saws and hand tools to keep trails cleared. You see a lot of stock. You just see the primitive tools and the primitive skills being emphasized.
With the 50th anniversary of the wilderness designation, the Spotted Bear Ranger District is hosting an event from 11 to 4 on Saturday the 2nd, featuring a lot of the people who've worked in and around the wilderness.
You know, we all think about the landscapes and how cool and that, but we want to celebrate and take time to listen to the people that have a connection with the wilderness. What is their story? What was that favorite trip that they went on or family experience?
Other organizations, Pack Strings, and the Bob Marshall Wilderness Foundation will also be involved in Saturday's event. The meet and greet with artists from the recent Artist Wilderness Connection happens at the Hockaday Museum in Kalispell on Thursday the 7th. And the big Go Wild event on September 20th at the fairgrounds will feature one of the architects of the 1964 Wilderness Bill, as well as more opportunities to hear and share stories of the wilderness. Katrin Fryatt reporting from the Flathead.
In tonight's forecast, first a look at current temperatures. In Lolo, it's 92 degrees. In Essex, it's 88 degrees. In Clancy, it's 85. In Belknap, it's 96 degrees. And in Deer Lodge, it's 88. West of the Divide tonight, look for partly cloudy skies with a slight chance of showers and thunderstorms with lows in the 50s. Friday will bring more clouds with a chance of showers and thunderstorms, highs in the 90s. In central Montana tonight, expect partly cloudy skies with isolated showers and thunderstorms through the night, lows in the 50s. Friday will be sunny. There's a slight chance of thunderstorms in the afternoon with highs in the upper 80s to lower 90s. In southwest Montana tonight will also be partly cloudy with scattered showers and thunderstorms in the evening and isolated showers after midnight, lows 50 to 55. Friday, look for partly cloudy skies. There's a chance of showers and thunderstorms through the day, highs 80 to 90. And now for the editorial comments of Evan Barrett.
If there's one thing that Americans and Montanans are proud of, it's the fact that our form of government is a democracy. We brag about that around the world and to ourselves. Our belief in American exceptionalism is based substantially upon the fact that we are the oldest continually functioning democratic constitutional governmental structure in the world. The fact that we have those free elections in our country is something we hold up as a model for the rest of the world to emulate. A look at the root meaning of the word democracy is instructive. Democracy combines the elements of demos, which means people, and kratos, which means power. Thus, democracy means power being exercised by the people. And in our case, it is principally through voting. It's fair to say that anything that constrains the right or ability of all the people to vote actually is a weakening of our democracy. That is what makes the current political effort to constrain voting through voter suppression such an obvious affront to the very nature of our democratic republic and our American system of values. For nearly 200 years, the United States consistently broadened the ability of its citizens to vote. But in recent years, voter suppression efforts in the U.S. are being put in place for purely partisan political reasons in dozens of states. It's a dark day for democracy when that happens. According to the Brenner Center for Justice, new voting restrictions developed since 2010 are slated to be in place in 22 states this November. In 15 of these states, 2014 will be the first federal election with new restrictions in effect. As it currently stands, eligible voters in nearly half the country couldn't find it harder to cast a ballot in the 2014 midterm elections. The new restrictive laws range from very difficult photo ID requirements to restrictions on early voting to voter registration restrictions. This effort is so distasteful that it pains me to say that it is primarily the product of one political party. But that is the sad fact. The obvious targets for reduced voting are primarily on voter groups, blacks, Hispanics, and the young, who are likely to vote for candidates and ideas that are against the political preferences of the Republicans. The legislatures that are enacting the changes are all Republican. The changes are being advanced in an effort to solve a fabricated problem, voter fraud, that is publicly advanced by the Republican Party against all evidence that such voter fraud is a politically convenient fantasy. When a state passes a law that stops Sunday voting, when one of the major traditions of black voting in that state is the busing of people from black churches to the polling places on the Sunday before the election, is it any wonder that the black voters see themselves as the targets of voter suppression? When a state passes a law that says a photo ID from a public university is not sufficient for a student to use at the polling place, well, a gun registration photo card is acceptable. Is it any wonder that the student feels he's being stepped on for political purposes? When a Hispanic area with an increasing number of new voters has the number of polling places reduced and the number of polling machines reduced even more, making lines longer and much more difficult and time-consuming on election day, is it any wonder that the Hispanic feels that someone doesn't want him or her to be able to vote? When same-day registration and voting is being cut back, as has been suggested in a referendum put on the ballot by the Republican majority in the Montana legislature, and most evidence points to the fact that the majority of late registrants do not vote the Republican way, is it any wonder that many Montanans think someone is trying to stop them from voting because of where they stand philosophically? The vote of the people is the bedrock of our democracy. Making it easy for people to vote is the obvious way to strengthen that democracy. So when a political party determines that the policies they advance cannot command the vote of the electorate, the logical thing for that political party to do is modify their ideas to make them palatable to the majority of the electorate. When a political party feels the demographic changes in the emerging new electorate work against them winning elections, the logical thing for them to do, and still be true to the ideals of our democracy, is to find ways to address that changing demographic. But democracy itself becomes a casualty when that political party instead tries to find ways to stop people who might disagree with them from voting. It's time for the Republican Party to look into the mirror. Examine its soul, consider its commitment to the principles of our democracy, and stop all these voter suppression tactics that put politics above policy, partisanship above principle. This is Evan Barrett in Butte, thinking about ways to return our nation to its traditional approach to broaden rather than restrict voter participation.
Evan Barrett is one of several commentators on Montana Evening Edition. The views expressed don't necessarily represent those of this station. If you have a comment, you can send it via our webpage at mtpr.org or on Montana Public Radio's Facebook page. Montana Evening Edition is also archived on our website. I'm Corin Cates-Carney.
And I'm Conrad Scheid. Thanks for listening, and please join Edward O'Brien tomorrow at 7, 8, and 8:30 for Montana Morning News.